This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And lots of stuff is going on in technology this week.
Yep.
Kind of interesting. There's a big acquisition of Global Crossing. Mm-hmm. Used to be valued at $40 billion. It now was purchased for $3 billion. And I'm certainly glad it was purchased by an American company, and I'll explain why.
Okay, that's good.
Microsoft Bing is growing. They're up to 30% of the search engine market, and it looks pretty good. And I installed IE9, Internet Explorer 9, this week. And have you installed it yet?
Well, you gave me the homework assignment, so I did. I put it on my crummy little netbook, and yeah, I've messed around with it a little bit.
So we're going to discuss our experiences with IE9.
See, the technical gurus here won't allow us to put IE9 on the work computer, so I had to do it online.
What exactly version do we have here of Internet?
IE2.5, I think.
IE7 in the studio? That is pathetic.
In the virtual faculty lounge, we only have IE7.
IE7, that is pathetic.
Oh, my goodness.
That has
to change.
That has got to change. I mean, that's a serious, serious technology violation.
There's going to be some butt-kicking in the
IT department. Google finally chose the city where they're going to provide free gigabit fiber optic networks. It's Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
We'll talk about what Kansas City can be looking forward to.
Is it worth moving for?
I don't think it's worth. I don't really think it's worth moving for that. Android has released a new version of Google Maps that adjusts to traffic. So when you have this navigator system running in Android, it will dynamically adjust your route when it detects traffic backups. It'll do that for you real time. That's going to eliminate the need for traffic reports on the radio.
Or I was going to say you could just listen to the radio and I could tell you where it is. But yeah, thanks for that vote. I'm giving you much more time to devote to your program then.
But
thanks,
pal. Oh, and later in the show we're going to be featuring the man who's behind Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
Another 20-something-year-old wonder who's right out of the chute. And his parents, I think, are probably proud of him now. But we're going to go through the whole rundown.
They never are at the beginning because he is just wasting his life.
Yeah, that's right. But now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Yeah, we got an email from PL in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I turned on my laptop on April 13th. And Nod32 said I needed to get Microsoft updates because I was not current. So I clicked on that and they began to download and install. It took forever. There were 46 updates on April 13th for Win XP and Office 2010. Could I have been using my computer to surf the net while this download install is being performed? I wasn't sure, so I just waited until it was completed and then restarted my PC. Thanks, PL in Bethesda.
Should be waiting impatiently in Bethesda.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you had not updated your machine for more than a month, because every month Microsoft has Update Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see, was April 13th on a Tuesday? Let me see what the...
No. It was on a Saturday. It was last
Saturday. April 13th is Wednesday.
Wednesday?
And so the April...
Oh, right, yeah.
So April 12th was Update Tuesday.
Ah, so he
or
she missed Tuesday.
I was down in Atlanta, Georgia at a Saks workshop. This is an accreditation workshop. And I turned on my machine and I had to do updates too, but I only had to do 22 updates.
Mm.
For Update Tuesday. Now, I'm thinking that if he had 46 plus updates, he probably missed the previous Update Tuesday and he put two together. Because Microsoft does about 20 to 25 a month.
Mm-hmm.
They average about one patch a day.
Wow.
So it's, a lot. They're trying to fight the battle. Fight the good battle.
When you think about it.
Yeah,
and trying.
And all of those updates are free just as part of your normal upgrade price, which is actually kind of a good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I mean, technically, since you were out, 46 updates weren't there, you could have had some vulnerabilities in there. But there's no reason why you can't surf the web. So while these updates are downloading, installing, I just keep surfing the web. I mean, it's a pretty small risk that I'm taking, actually. But you don't really have to wait for that. Mm-hmm. But when you're finished installing them, you do have to reboot the machine or they don't take hold.
Right.
So I go ahead and just surf the web, and when they're finished installing, I just allow the reboot to occur. Now, if you want to be absolutely sure that you are not going to have any vulnerability, then simply wait until they've all installed. And then surf.
And come back tomorrow.
But I just don't have that kind of patience.
I know you don't.
Email from Tiffany. Tiffany. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've returned to the same coffee shop where I was a few months ago. Must be a Starbucks. She didn't want to say that. When I noticed my email had been hijacked.
Wow.
This time I'm using my phone. But last time, when I noticed the hack, I was using my computer and doing email over an open internet free Wi-Fi network.
Ew.
Do you think that could be the source of a problem or just a coincidence? Thanks, Tiffany. Well, Tiffany, I don't think it was just a coincidence. I think you probably were. Somebody did probably sniff your password as you were putting it in over the open network. It's very easily done, and there are software programs that can grab it. Now, but you can use these Wi-Fi networks safely. Now, let me just explain a few things that you want to do. First of all, you want to make certain that your firewall is turned on. See, when you're at home, you might have your firewall off because you're behind another firewall router and you don't need that. But you want to turn on your firewall. By the way, that's because people can actually look at the local network, and if somebody has their firewall turned off, they might be able to look at all the shared file directories on somebody else's hard drive. I mean, in fact, you've got to do this in a hotel, too. Even if you're hooked to the Ethernet, you can go to network neighborhood, and you can look at all the people who are logged onto the hotel network.
Oh, yeah.
And some of these folks have shared folders that, you know, because they want to copy files back and forth at work, and they're shared, and they're not password protected, and anybody at the hotel can just grab this stuff and go.
Ugh.
Grab and go. So I never do that, but I like to look around to see who's vulnerable.
Yeah.
It just gives me
it's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience, but I don't grab and go. I just look and leave.
No, it's for purposes of our own edification on
that's
the radio.
That's right. So make certain your firewall is turned on so somebody can't get into your hard drive. Then when you want to do anything that requires logging in, you want to do secure socket layer, SSL. Now, if you're using Outlook Express or any of these standard POP like Outlook Express, Windows Mail, Windows Mail Live, Thunderbird, you actually have got to configure those to use Secure Socket Layer, and you go into the configuration and do that, and you may have to shift the port to do that. It's a little bit more complicated. More than likely, though, you were using something like Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo and logging on. Now, you can choose in all of these cases an HTTPS option, a secure socket layer option, and you can go into the configuration and you can set it up for that, in which case your password then is fully encrypted when you log on. However, not all of the email services maintain that secure socket layer after the logon page, and your emails could then be unencrypted and read if somebody was so interested.
Right.
The only one that can reliably keep in a secure mode is Gmail. So you can configure Gmail to be an HTTPS. You go into configuration, and it always stays encrypted. And that's the only one that I would trust when I'm sitting there logged on at a Starbucks, for instance. I don't do anything else. And you really don't want to do online banking there.
No, that's
unless the online bank also has an encrypted password, but HTTPS input. Now the other thing is Facebook is actually a little bit unreliable. You can use require HTTPS or secure socket layer option on Facebook, But what happens is when you have various Facebook apps installed, it kind of drops out of that HTTPS mode, and these apps start logging into your system on their own without that HTTPS,
mm-hmm.
and bingo.
Yeah.
They're giving out your password to everybody. So I don't think you can trust Facebook there. Now, of course, if you're a business user and you really got super secret stuff, you could have a paid VPN, virtual private network, where you basically have a server. You get an encrypted pipe to that server, and all of your internet requests come out from that particular proxy server that you've got an encrypted pipe to. And you can normally get VPN services for less than $100 a year. So if you're really a super duper business traveler, you could do that, in which case everything is encrypted, and then it doesn't matter whether you use Facebook or whether it's HTTPS is actually enabled or not. Now, the final bit of advice I would give you: do not make all of your different email accounts, Facebook accounts, and Twitter accounts with the same password.
Yep.
Because if that password is then compromised, everything is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I know it's like convenient to have one password, like the name of your dog.
Right.
But you want to have a hard password to predict. And then you want to make a different password for each item. Now, there are different methods to come up with all kinds of passwords. I probably have 15 or 20 passwords, and so I've got to sort of develop methods to keep all of these straight.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have a formula that I use, but they're different for everything.
It's different for everything, and so you can some people will like take a word or a sentence, and they'll take the first letter of each word in the sentence mm-hmm. and use that to make a password.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say, if an S shows up, they'll make it a dollar sign.
Right.
And they might say, if an O shows up, they make it a zero. And so you might have something very simple like that, and you could say, then you could just say, okay, my password is the dog jumped over the moon 55 times. And then you could just convert that in, and then you could use those conversion techniques,
right.
And then at least you can remember it. So you want to develop some technique
that's the
like
thing.
That.
Come up with some sort of a formula, but it's something that means something to you and that you can remember.
Now, so Tiffany, I hope that gave you some advice. I don't know if you can get back your email account once it's been hijacked. Now, if it turns out that they have not changed the alternate email address, You could click on that you need to reset your password, and they'll send a notification to your email address, and you can reset the password. If, however, the person hijacked it has changed all that data, you're stuck. You probably can't get it back, and you'll just have to open up another one.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to be careful the next time. Okay, we have an email from David. Dear Tech Talk, I'm trying to look for a technology job, and I don't know where to turn. I've been sending out hundreds of resumes. That doesn't sound good either, does it?
No.
It's not thousands. Hundreds of resumes and getting no response. What do you suggest? Thanks, David. Well, David, resumes are probably not the best way to go. In fact, we have all of our – we've got actually at Stratford University, we've got a 93% placement rate. And we actually show our students how to get jobs. There's a method to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would advise that you buy the book, What Color Is Your Parachute, by Dick Bowles. I mean, it's been on the bestseller list for 25 years, and there's a certain methodology to this that's quite good, where you first of all figure out what you're good at and what you like to do. Instead of just running around trying to snag a job, figure out who you are. So if somebody asks you to summarize yourself in 2 minutes, you could actually summarize yourself coherently and say who you are, what you're good at, what you like to do, and so you could actually make a presentation. But that takes a lot of introspection to get to that point, and What Colors Your Parachute has exercises to do that. Then they have a process of surveying, where if you want to go into a particular field or a particular area, first of all, you decide where you want to live in the country. Then if you want to work for a particular type of company, you survey all of those different companies, find out about them. And then you can actually go to the companies and survey and talk to people from those companies. You don't have to actually apply for a job. And they give you the methods of doing informal surveys, formal surveys. And that process of talking to people is a very good strategy, talking to people other than HR.
Mm-hmm.
The other
mm-hmm.
thing is you can join users groups. I advise this. If you're interested in Oracle, join the Oracle users group. Find a way to meet professionals outside of the HR function.
Right.
And behave like a professional. You could go to conferences that aren't too expensive. There's some local conferences that aren't really that expensive. Go there, go back for the coffee, and then, you know, talk to people. So you want to just sort of get into the field very slowly, and you want to talk to people other than HR. This book gives the whole process for that. I highly recommend it. Read that book and then get back to us with your final results.
Well, we've talked about this before on the show. There are some professional trade publications you can pick up too.
Yes, that's right.
What would you suggest that would be a good reading?
Well, I call them the industry rags. These, like network news, computer news. There are a whole series of them that that come out weekly, and they're free. So you can just basically toggle on the internet for computer magazines, computer news magazines, computer industry updates, Oracle, and there are a whole series of them. And you can apply for them, and you'll get them free. And if you read these industry rags, you've got also something to talk about in an interview, and that's really what the people in the field do. Now, we have one other email that actually I put it back in later in the show, but I think okay. I should make it. We got an email from a loyal listener in Bowie, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And I made this a news article, but actually it was actually an email. They said, "Dear Tech Talk, I want to buy a new phone from Verizon, and the HTC Thunderbolt 4G was just released. It looks beautiful. It's got all these applications. It's fantastic. I want to just go down there and buy it."
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, what do you think, Tech Talk? Should I get this phone because I'll be stuck with it 2 years, or what should I do? What are my options? Well, loyal listener in Bowie, I looked at this Verizon 4G phone, Thunderbolt. It's from HTC. It is fantastic. It's got an Android 2.2 operating system. It's got all kinds of useful applications. It's got some bloatware that you probably have to uninstall. And it operates with this, you know, on the fourth generation network, which gives you 7 to 15 megabits per second download. I mean, it's a lightning fast download. Now, here's the problem. But there's a but to this.
There's always a but.
Yeah, by the way, the fourth generation network is called LTE. When you're operating the 4G mode, the battery life is 1.5 to 2 hours.
Ew.
Now, I'm thinking to myself, if I've got this cell phone and I try to go to work, by 10 o'clock in the morning, my cell phone battery's dead.
That's not good at all.
No, I guess to get through the day, I guess I could carry four batteries with me.
That's self-defeating, isn't it?
Yeah. At least you can change the battery, unlike the iPhone,
where you
can't remove the battery.
Right.
I guess you could take a charger with you. Now, it's that 4G is a power hog, and you can't turn it off. But if you go and get this special unauthorized app, which you can download, you can turn off the 4G and operate in 3G mode, and the battery life goes up to 3.5 to 4 hours. But then why would you want to buy this expensive 4G phone and only operate it in 3G?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say Verizon and LTC, you better go back to the drawing boards.
Sounds like that's a you better wait on this.
Yeah, I'd say if you want to get a phone now, I'd get the iPhone 4. I mean, the iPhone 4 will, you know, if you're not a heavy user on the iPhone, it will last 7 hours during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some folks at Stratford have the iPhone 4, and they actually have a little separate external battery pack that they plug in, so it. The battery's dead around 4 o'clock, so they plug in that booster,
yeah.
And it gets them to 6.
Great.
So they can at least make it through the day with this little booster. And so if you really want
people hard if they're there until 6 o'clock at night.
I know. I make them get there at from 6 in the morning till 6 at night.
Wow.
And that's longer than – that's 12 hours, mm-hmm. and that's longer than the battery life on the iPhone 4.
I don't know if that could work for you.
So, you know, and so I cannot let people work for the length of the battery life of their cell phone.
Exactly.
Otherwise, everybody buy an HTC. Thunderbolt.
Hour and a half later, they're gone. All right. How would folks send you an email? Because we love your emails.
We do love your emails. If you want to send us an email, send it to techtalk at stratford.edu, and that'll be forwarded right to me. And we love to get these emails because they make the show so much more interesting.
Yes, they do. And you can listen to us on the radio in a lot of places. In Washington on 1500 AM and 103.5 FM HD2. In the Virginia suburbs, we can be heard on 107.7 FM HD2. And in Frederick and Points North and West on 820 AM. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tysons Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today in the hot seat is Drew Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Houston is co-founder and CEO of Dropbox, a privately held internet company funded by venture capital, which provides cloud storage and synchronization services. You can also get free services of it, but they limit you to 2 megabytes of file storage, and then you can pay a little bit more. It's the freemium model.
Ah.
They start you out free, and then you pay for enhanced service. So they're using the freemium model. Houston was born in 1983 in Massachusetts. Drew graduated from Action Boxborough Regional High in Action, Massachusetts in 2001. I looked up Action Boxborough Regional High.
Mm-hmm.
Every year they've got about 20 merit scholars, and their SAT scores are through the roof. I don't know what it is about that Action, Massachusetts, but there are some bright, bright kids in that high school.
It's something in the water, I think.
That's right. He enrolled in the MIT Computer Science Program in 2001. And when he was a junior, this would be about April of 2004, he started a company called Accolade, which was an online SAT prep company.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people wanted to see, of course, when he was in college, in high school, he, you know, that Action Boxborough Regional High, they had very high SAT scores. So probably everybody was using SAT prep methods. So he set up an SAT prep company, and he was selling it to, you know, rising high school folks. And actually, he was making quite a bit of money on it. He called it Ramen Profitable. R-A-M-E-N, profitable. This is actually, I had to look this up. This actually is a word that sort of evolved recently in the entrepreneurial space. Ramen profitable means that it generates enough money to pay your living expenses. But it doesn't pay off enough to reward any investors.
Ah.
Okay, so it was ramen profitable. So he paid for his living expenses while he was in school.
Funny.
Now, his junior year, though, he got, you know, even though this was only ramen profitable, he took off a year. He said, you know, Mom, Dad, this MIT thing, you know, I got to work on this SAT prep company.
Right.
So he took off a year to work on this thing, and it was still ramen profitable.
Uh-huh.
Now, he was making a little extra money, which made his mom happy. He played guitar in a band, the Angry Flannel Band. I looked up their website, The front page of their website no longer works. So you go to the front page of the Angry Flannel website, you get this error
code. It's a
great name. So I go to the back pages. So I looked at all the back pages, and he basically played it mostly at school events. I saw his picture there. He played quite a mean guitar, apparently. Finally, in 2006, Houston received a Bachelor of Science degree in computer science from MIT. I think his mom was really happy. You know, he decided this accolade, this ROM on profitability was no way to go. And then in January 2006, he landed a job with Bit9. And his mom was even happier. He worked on Windows internals. These are like internal programs to Windows that would support various applications that Bit9 was fielding. And he worked there. His parents were really happy. He started in January 2006, but by May of 2007, he was fed up with it.
Uh-huh.
So he was there for 17 months.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know, Mom, Dad, I know I got this big loan here for MIT, but I got to quit.
Oh, boy.
I got to work on this new company, Dropbox. You know, his dad said, you know, Drew, is it going to be any better than Accolade?
And so, oh, boy.
You know, you can see how that goes. Now, this is what inspired Drew to develop Dropbox. As an MIT student, he was inspired to create it because he kept forgetting his USB drive at home. He'd work on this computer, then that computer. He was trying to carry his files all around. And he'd never have the right USB drive with him, and he tried to replicate files all over the place. He actually had, and he really started trying to do this file replication because his main hard drive at home crashed, and he had no backup.
Mm-hmm.
So then
because
he was only ROM and profitable, and so then he had to go in and try to reconstruct files. He had to, you know, get them from other computers. It was a big drag. So he looked at some of the online storage services. He said, you know, I need to do some online storage to, you know, to solve my USB problem and disk failure problem. But he said all of these online storage solutions, you know, there were several of them, had long internet latency. They had bugs in them. They're just too complicated to use. So he decided, you know, I just got a degree. I'm learning computer science. Why don't I write something for myself? So he began working on a little program that would allow him to upload files to the internet, and so that he would automatically be able to use those files. And his method was this. He'd create a folder on, say, computer A and copy all the files to it. And he would have a client then would take everything in that folder and then upload it to the internet and synchronize it. Then he might have another computer with also a shared folder on it, and it would be connected to the same internet storage area, and then it would synchronize there. So if he had changed a file on computer A, it would upload to the internet, and then it would. And if the other computer was on, it would download it to the other computer, and so all the folders were synchronized at all the time.
Wow.
So no matter where he would go, all of his files would be there. And so he started working on this thing, and he said, you know, probably this would solve a lot of problems that other people have. And he began to get the idea that maybe he could do something with this.
Okay.
Now, actually, you know, when he started writing Dropbox, he was still actually in school. And it wasn't until after he had worked 17 months that he decided to make it into a company. But he wrote his first lines of Dropbox while he was at a train station in Boston. That's where it got started. Finally, in 2007, after he quit his first real job, he co-founded Dropbox with a fellow MIT student, Arash Ferdowsi. Now, and the Dropbox that they had envisioned basically was the same method that he has. He shared folders, file synchronization. It also, they added revision history, so if you change a file, it would keep track of that so you wouldn't overwrite old files. So it was kind of nice. Once they got the initial, some of the initial software working, they got some seed money from a company called Y Incubator. Now, this Y Incubator is pretty interesting. What they do is that they've actually, in the last 5 years, they have funded around 105 startups. But they give them a very small amount of money, and then they give them a lot of help. And they have two intakes a year, and they work with them very intensely for 3 months. So they, and if they've got two people that have founded a thing, they typically only give you $17K. I mean, it's a small potatoes. If they got three people in the company, they might give you $20K. And then they worked with them on it, and they developed it under the Y Combinator tutelage, and with their big $17K cash flow, they actually built it up. And then in 2008, they made an official launch at the TechCrunch 50 annual conference. At that point, Dropbox was able to raise $7.25 million in Series A VC funding from Sequoia Capital and Accel Partners. So now they were in the bucks. But he talks a lot about the way he started. He says we were lean and mean. The way Y Combinator started them, instead of getting bloated up with fancy desks and overhiring, they just kept everything small. And he said that made it much, much more successful. Now, there was one small problem. The domain name Dropbox.com was taken. A cyber squatter had it.
Ah.
So they couldn't even use Dropbox.com. They had to use GetDropbox.com.
Great.
And then finally, in 2009, October, they acquired Dropbox.com from the domain squatter, probably using some of this $7 million in Series A VC money. They probably had enough money to buy the guy out.
Mm-hmm.
So they now became officially, in October 2009, Dropbox.com. Now, in 2009, they also hired Adam Gross. He was a former Salesforce veteran, the senior vice president of marketing. Obviously, they were in the money now because they could start hiring senior people. By January 2010, Dropbox had more than 4 million users.
Hmm.
Now, that's not 4 million paying users because they're on the freemium model, but it's 4 million users. Now, Dropbox uses Amazon's S3 storage system. That's that elastic storage cloud that Amazon has. And so they don't really keep any hardware there. Now, Drew, when he has any free time, still likes to jam on his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, he still thinks of those good old days when he was in angry flannel.
Yeah, I just Googled angry flannel to see his picture, and
you have to go to the back page.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to the back page?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah,
what did you think?
He's got the rock and roll kind of look thing going
does.
On there.
Now this guy is really—he just says what is on his mind. He's got a Twitter account. He's a Twitter at Drew Houston. He's got a Facebook account, facebook.com/Houston. He's on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Drew Houston. And his company website, of course, is now Dropbox.com.
There you go.
So this has still not gone public yet. Obviously, they're waiting to issue an IPO sometime. At some point, Drew is going to make a lot of money, and his parents will be very happy.
I made one other discovery here. I googled the Acton-Boxborough School District. It's actually Acton without the I.
Oh, it's Acton.
Acton without the I. So it's not action. It's Acton-Boxborough. It's two different communities.
Oh, Acton.
They have a combined combined school district.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, this is the great thing about the web. We could go on here and figure out what the lunch menu is next week at the Acton-Boxborough School District.
Well, that's good. Cared. I'm glad. So it's in Acton,
Massachusetts.
I am glad that you are right on top of all the misinformation that I'm spewing
out.
Well,
but you gather so much stuff that, you know, there's bound to be a little something here or there. But
see, if you dig down in there, they're very proud of their SAT scores and of the number of people that are merit scholars.
As well, they should be.
Yes, indeed. That's about all you'd ever want to know about Dropbox.com. I would suggest, actually, this is a great way to transfer files. Just go there, get up a free account, and try it out. I think I'm going to give it a try. I'm not using it now, but I kind of like the idea.
That is a good idea. All right, well, you're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. And your chance to win a fabulous prize comes up in just a moment. So remember this number, 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. The pop quiz is next here on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Well, you know, this is a classroom of the airways.
I'm not fighting with you anymore.
I know. And if it's a classroom of the airways, that means there is going to be a pop quiz.
At this time of the year.
Yes.
With the school season ending, these quizzes become more and more important.
Yes, they do. Well, someday we'll have a final, and maybe there'll be some grand prize.
Well, I don't want to think about it.
But this
final.
Is more like just a weekly exam.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a weekly exam here. Now, the nice thing about the pop quizzes here at Tech Talk Classroom of the Airways is that you win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room in Woodbridge, and maybe the dining room in Richmond as soon as they give it its name.
As of yet unnamed.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about the founder of Dropbox. That, of course, would be Drew Houston. His first company was started while he was in school, and it was named Accolade. He called this particular company blank profitable.
So you had to fill in the blank today. So
yeah.
If you can come up with that word, call us now at 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. Once again, the number to play the pop quiz is 877-936-9333. Blank profitable.
That's right. You've got to have a one word.
It's a one word answer.
One word fills the blank. That's right. You know, this week I used the electronic boarding pass for the first time. You ever used one of those, Jim?
I have not. No.
Well, you know, we were traveling down at Atlanta, Georgia, and then coming back. You know, you've got to go on, log on, and get your boarding pass. We didn't have a printer, so we just sent the boarding pass to our cell phones. And I got an email from them, and I opened up the email, and I get this, basically, it looks like a square with all this black and white, a black and white pattern on it. It's a two-dimensional barcode.
Yeah.
And so you can just hold this two-dimensional barcode over a reader, and then you don't need to have paper. Now, there are certain problems with it.
Yeah.
First of all, the light has to be on in your display.
Mm-hmm.
So what was happening when I went through the first time, I got the thing adjusted, and I had the image a little bit too small. See, like here it is now. You can see there it's kind of small.
It's very small,
and I held
yes.
it there, and it wasn't reading it, and then the light would turn off because, you know, I want to save battery. So my light would turn off, and then I'd hold, and it wouldn't read it. So it wouldn't read it fast enough before the light would turn off. So then I made the image a little bit bigger, and if I'd hold it right over the glass, it wouldn't read it. I'd have to hold it back a little bit and turn it at a certain angle. And finally, I was able to get the reader to read this.
Mm-hmm.
It was fairly difficult, but I did get through. This was through the security area. Then I went to the gate, and of course, we had to wait 3 hours for the plane.
Ugh.
It was a lousy connection.
I'll bet.
So what happened was my cell phone battery went dead.
Oh, now you've got a real problem.
Because the plane left at 7 o'clock, and of course, you know, it's just good for one day. So then I had to try to find a plug there in the airport. Fortunately, I did find a plug right by a table in the bar.
Mm-hmm. Which lends itself to other problems.
That's right. Uh-huh. So then I went in there, plugged in my cell phone, and I did technical work.
Yeah, right.
I did technical work, and then when I went to check in at the gate, what I realized was that they can't tell whether I'm boarding group one, boarding group two. I'm Premier Elite. They just walk up. You just see this boarding code there. You just walk in.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim and I, we were conspiring. So we'll just walk in when we're not supposed to board. See what they do. You just hold your thing up. Go right through.
And Jim did the same thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He did the same thing. So actually, that is one advantage of electronic boarding. Just get on when you want.
Get on when you want.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
A little
bit scary. I mean, the whole thing. You're lucky you found it. You're lucky you had a charger with you.
Yeah. See that is one thing.
I just
happened to have a charger with me. Now it turns out that these barcode. They're using a barcoded boarding pass, and this was actually a standard that IATA came up with, and they're simplifying the business program. IATA is the International Air Transport Authority,
mm-hmm.
and they actually came up with a standard for this two-dimensional barcode. And what they did, there are actually three different barcode vendors that have come up with two-dimensional barcodes, and they've created a standard that will allow any one of the three to be used. So their readers will read any one of the three. This program was actually launched in 2008 with great fanfare. But now it has gotten widespread distribution at all the airports. It's only been recently that they've penetrated all the airports. And so this time I have to say that probably 15% of the passengers were using this cell phone electronic ticket and electronic boarding pass, and I'd never seen so much of that before.
Gotcha. We've stumped a lot of people today. We normally don't do a fill-in-the-blank quiz, so mm-hmm. I'm going to ask the question again. We talked about Drew Houston and Profiles in IT, the founder mm-hmm. of Dropbox.com. Mm-hmm. His first company was not that profitable. It was just enough to get him by. He called it blank profitable. It's a one-word answer.
They were listening to every other fact.
You add water
they want
to
know,
it.
They listen Accolade. They know Angry Flannel. They know all of the different options. But this one
kind of stumped them. Oh, wait a minute. Now we've got a few people who are thinking they may have the answer.
Yeah,
so
And this is actually a phrase I didn't know. I had to look it up. It turns out in the entrepreneurial community, it's become very popular of recent times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was outside of my vocabulary, which is why I kind of highlighted it. Because when I learn something new, it always makes for a happy day.
I'm watching the answers come in now. Number one is close but no cigar.
Well, let's see. While we're waiting, why don't I just
talk about something else?
Yeah, let's talk
about. Wait a
about-
minute. Oh, yeah. Okay. You know what? I'm going to let Andrew get to all the lines here, and you talk about something else, and then, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about IE Explorer 9.
Yeah.
IE 9.
Okay.
Now, Microsoft released Internet Explorer 9 this week, of course. And I'm telling you, yeah, you know, I have on my computer at home, I've got Internet Explorer, I have Chrome, I have Foxfire, and I have Opera. And I'm telling you, Internet Explorer 9, when I opened it up, it looked like Chrome.
Uh-huh.
It looked, first of all, it had a very, very large viewing area because they kept all the border stuff to the minimum. They just got rid of all that border stuff, and they just put it all as small as they could make it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fast.
It is fast.
They made the thing. They focused on speed, just like Google did. And the other thing they did, they support the web standards like Chrome, and that had not been always the rub of Internet Explorer. They didn't. They had their own set of standards. They didn't support them all. So people would write websites for Chrome or for IE, and then they wouldn't work in the other, mm-hmm. in the other browser. You'd have to for developers. You had to write almost. You had to adjust the code depending on the browser,
mm-hmm.
and so all the developers were always cussing out Internet Explorer, but they had the biggest market share, so you had to deal with it. So this thing is a big win, I think, for Microsoft. I mean, they're definitely going the right direction. It's the standards direction, the Chrome direction, and the browser speed. It's really very good. Now they've got tabs just like they have. They've got all kinds of features on it that are quite nice. One nice thing is You can act. The search field is actually in the address bar. So you click this little search. So the address bar can toggle back and forth between search and address, which means you don't have to have another search bar like for Google.
Which is pretty cool.
So I click on that and I can do my Google searches. You don't have to have a whole another Google bar. So it makes it much easier.
It's busy and it's small.
Yeah.
But once you get used to it, it's pretty cool.
It actually is not bad. They don't have pop-up notifications. They've got just down at the bottom. It's now in turn, they did speed tests on the thing. Chrome was still the fastest. The close second now was Internet Explorer, and it used to be the slowest. Mm-hmm. That was followed by Foxfire and then by Opera. So I think that we're having some real competition in the browser. In the browser wars, and I think only the consumer is going to win. So, good job, Microsoft, on IE9.
We have somebody on the phone. Let's go to line number two. This is Mark calling from, I'm sorry, this is Warren calling from Haymarket, Virginia. Warren, good morning. How are you?
Fine.
Excellent. Okay, Doc, ask the question, please.
Well, earlier in the show, I talked about Drew Houston, and his first company was Accolade, and he earned just enough money to live, and that he called that blank profitable.
Ramen profitable.
That is correct.
That is correct. Warren.
Very good. Ramen profitable.
You have won today.
You'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier or
Cafe Kareem.
Kareem dining room there in Woodbridge. Just stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew.
Yep. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. And thanks for playing the Pop Quiz here on Tech Talk, Warren. And we're going to be right back after this. We've got more of Tech Talk in just a moment here on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. Level 3 has acquired Global Crossing for $3 billion in stock. Now, this is actually a very significant story. The transaction was valued at $3 billion. They had a net debt of $1.1 billion, so they only actually gave them stock for $1.9 billion. They subtracted out the debt. Now, Global Crossing's network platform offers VPN, lease lines, audio, video conferencing, long-distance, traveled, managed services. But most importantly, it is international. If you remember, Global Crossing was the company that laid these very expensive fibers underneath the oceans, and they linked the world with fiber optic. And the idea was they were going to make a high-bandwidth fiber optic network that was global. And it was really quite an exciting vision that the founders had. Now, it turned out that in 2002, the company filed for bankruptcy. And I remember that when that happened. And Global Crossing's founder, Gary Winnick, was sued for fraud by the company's shareholders. Winnick and the other executives eventually paid out $325 million in settlements. Probably they were manipulating stock prices in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the danger was that China would buy this all this fiber optic infrastructure. I mean, you think about it. I mean, I really did not want to have this tremendous network infrastructure fall into the hands of another country.
Sure.
I mean, it really would have been a huge problem. And so I'm glad to see that Level 3, which is, you know, one of the strong backhaul providers here in the U.S., has gone global with this purchase of Global Crossing. I think it's a great purchase. They got it used to be valued at when it was riding high at $40 billion.
Wow.
So now it was valued at $1.9 billion minus the $1.1 billion debt. So that's where they say the $3 billion right. in cost. And so it was quite a big fall, but I think it's a big win for technology. And Level 3 is going to make hay out of this.
I was going to ask, do you think they can be profitable with this?
Oh, yeah. You get this much infrastructure for $3 billion, you're going to be profitable.
Well, what was Global 3's, why couldn't they pull this off? Was it the mismanagement at the top, or
what do you mean? Why couldn't why couldn't Global Crossing do it?
Make some money with this, yeah.
Because the actual cost of deploying the fiber network was so great, they couldn't carry the debt load,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have the customer base to support it. And I think they were probably cooking the books on their customer base or something to try to get investors,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to get a big pump in the stock price, and they just didn't have the market for it,
right.
But now that it's been purchased for $3 billion, Level 3 can actually make money for it. So it's sort of like the guy that takes you out of bankruptcy is going to be the one that makes the money on it.
Yeah.
So now the two companies are going to create a giant global networking space.
Mm-hmm.
The combined platform will be anchored by fiber optic networks in three continents and support clients in 50 countries. Get this, allowing Netflix to deliver movies.
Ooh.
Globally.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
Revenues from the two companies in 2010 combined was $6 billion.
Good grief.
That actually is a very good news for the U.S. I love to see that.
You can see all of the possible pitfalls that could arise with that kind of technology in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
Right?
Without a doubt.
I think we should take a break
here.
Let's do that, and then we'll just finish it up. This is Tech Talk, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2, online at techtalkonline.com, and you can learn more about Stratford University at stratford.edu. We'll be right back.
It's technology. It's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Demand is great for IT professionals that can gain a security clearance. According to a recent Federal Computer Week article, federal agencies and private sector businesses that support government contracts can't get enough credentialed people to keep pace with government work. Tremendous opportunities exist for mid-career and late-career workers if they are retrained, particularly if they have had previous military service. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares students to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. You know, Georgia, it's one of the former Russian states.
Yep.
A 75-year-old woman was arrested for single-handedly cutting off the internet in Georgia and Armenia.
Oops.
Hayastan Shakarian,
good luck with that.
75, is accused of forcing thousands of people in both countries offline for hours after hacking into the fiber optic cable while digging for scrap metal.
I just have pictures in my head of thousands of computer screens going, getting a 404 error on them. Huh? What happened?
Shakarian said she's just a poor woman poor old woman who is not capable of committing such a crime. She lives in poverty-stricken Georgian village of Amazai, around 15 kilometers from the capital. And she said she'd only been collecting firewood. I have no idea what the internet is, she said.
Mm-hmm.
But she was charged with damaging property and could face up to 3 years in prison if convicted. The Georgia Interior Ministry said that despite her claims of innocence, Sherkarian has already confessed to cutting the fiber optic. So maybe she did know what she was doing.
Why? Why would she do this?
I don't know. But although the Georgian Railway Telecom insists that the 600-kilometer cable has robust protection, this is not the first time it's been damaged. It was briefly cut off in 2009 by another scavenger who hacked into the cable while also hunting for scrap metal. So maybe they better put this thing in a pipe or something.
I was going to say, what is it? Is it made out of paper mache or what? I mean, and what is she using to dig with?
I don't know.
A 75-year-old with a shovel can break the internet? Give me a break. Come on.
Something's
not adding up here. My detector is going off, you know?
No, but these cables are not that strong. I mean, there is some, the outside of a fiber cable does have some wire strands to strengthen it, but it's not like a heavy pipe.
No, I know that, but isn't it relatively thick?
It is. It could be an inch thick. It could be an inch thick, it's got a metal sheath. It would be hard to cut it unless you really were jamming at it, thinking you'd hit something you were trying to get through a rock or something.
Oh, it's an old Buick.
Yeah. Okay, Kansas City is celebrating.
Yes.
Big time celebration. It's not that they're not having the Olympics.
No.
They're not having the Commonwealth Games.
Nope.
No. They are going to get gigabit fiber. Google has chosen Kansas City for its new fiber optics project. We'll provide the city with gigabit connections at retail prices. They'll just pay their normal internet access fees, and they'll get speeds that are 100 times faster. The search engine Google chose this city to host the Google Fiber Project, and it plans to bring high-speed gigabit connections to all members of the city within the next couple of years. Kansas City was one of over 1,100 towns that applied for the fiber program, and they were the one that was selected. Now, Google's not using new technology. It's just a new level of access. Usually, you have a gigabit backbone and megabit nerve endings going in each of the houses. That would be your standard retail service. In this case, the gigabit is going to go all the way to your doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have gigabit rate coming right to your house. So that means that, say, if you want to make a Skype call, you do it in HD. You could have HD TV Skype. No problem. It would be useful for telepresence. It turns out the Kansas City Medical Center is going to use it for telemedicine. They're going to set up gigabit access cameras all around so you can see real-time traffic around the city. There are all kinds of opportunities. Google is hoping that will invent some interesting new applications. Congratulations, Kansas City.
Yes.
I see the time is up.
Yep.
We love your emails. TechTalk@stratford.edu. Go to techtalkonline.com and you can get our podcast, or you can go to Apple iTunes to get the podcast. And listen, don't forget to go to www.stratford.edu and check out those programs and make certain to tell them that you heard about it on Tech Talk.
And the Tech Talk replay is today at 6 p.m.
Program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Nats and the Brewers on the air later today, weather permitting from Nats Park. Game time or pregame at 1230. Rainy today, high in the 60s right now, 52. Rainy, it's 10 o'clock.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. The show is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, full service.